From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Or Redwood City, California.
Hayward?
Near Richmond, Richmond District, kind of.
I'm from Concord.
Coming up, what happens when students can't afford transit?
They've told me that they've missed weeks of school.
Until a pilot program provided them free bus passes. Also, we'll hear how performers in East Oakland use art to cope with losing their homes.
Who's gonna save them when the ghosts live here now? Who's occupying the place, making space? Because we've been uprooted.
And we'll take a closer look at one of the most visible political billboards in the Bay Area.
I mean, the Grand Lake is unique in that it has this huge marquee right alongside the freeway and a major thoroughfare.
Making a statement today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Nydia Baez is an assistant principal at Fremont High School in Oakland. She says she used to bring extra cash to school in case a student asked for bus money.
You know, can I get a dollar to get on the bus?
Public schools in California are not required to provide buses for most students. So just 11% of California kids ride a school bus. That's the lowest rate in the nation by far. For kids in low-income families, paying the fare for public transportation can become one more barrier to getting a good education. But in Alameda County, a new pilot program offers free bus passes to students at several schools. KLW's transportation reporter Eli Wertschafter has the story.
Devon Allen grew up in East Oakland.
I was like the impressionable, little nerdy, nice guy.
He's 25, so he's over it now. But in middle school, he used to get teased for his sneakers.
Oh, look at him showing up with light-up Skechers. Always make fun of him, pick on him.
Because Oakland public schools don't run any yellow school buses, Allen usually took the public bus home. But he was going through a custody battle. Sometimes he stayed with his mom, sometimes he stayed with an auntie.
So it was tough trying to figure out, okay, who's paying for what? You know, how is he gonna get to school?
Some days he didn't have bus money, so he'd have to walk or run.
I remember one time this guy, he just kind of wanted to pick on me.
And he'd chase after Allen on his way home.
Well, I remember I used to be hopping fences, trying to get away from him, and basically fight my way home.
So in high school, when Allen started doing some community organizing, he focused his energy on transportation. He and other student leaders surveyed over 250 Oakland youth.
They've told me that they've missed weeks of school. And what blew my mind even more is how much they were paying for transportation. I think I had one youth tell me, in 1 month, they paid $200 for transportation.
Almost half said they had missed school because they didn't have bus money. This was in 2014, and Allen didn't know it yet, but that year there was a countywide ballot measure, Measure BB, trying to deal with this very problem.
Transportation, we feel, is a right.
That's Yvonne Williams. She's the president of the main union for AC Transit employees. The union supported Measure BB. And while there were a lot of transportation projects in the measure, drivers were especially excited about one, a pilot program for a free youth bus pass.
If you don't have a car or the means to transport your children to school, they shouldn't be deprived of the ability to get the education they need.
When Williams drove buses in Oakland, she says she saw kids without bus money all the time.
I've had parents bring students to the bus stop and just say, can you do it for me one more time? Can you, get my baby to school?
AC Transit already offers a youth bus pass for $20 a month. Measure BB went a step further. It said, let's offer free bus passes at a few Alameda County schools and see how it goes. When Devon Allen heard about that, he jumped into action.
I started doing house calls. I started, calling people, reminding them about Measure BB. I also was canvassing, passing out flyers to people, also slipping them into people's doors.
The measure passed with 70% of the vote.
I was excited, man. I'll never forget the day I got the text message saying that it went through, it passed. I jumped for joy, man.
Now, AC Transit actually tried a similar pilot in 2002, a free bus pass for low-income students only. But they cut the program short after a year. They found it was too expensive to determine who qualified as low-income. So the new program tries a few different things. Students at 5 schools get free bus passes, and at a handful of other schools, they're experimenting with free bus passes for some, discounts for others, or just helping students navigate the bus system. It's Thursday morning. Tiana Ortiz steps onto a bus with her new personalized card.
It's a blue Clipper card. It's blue, and then it got your name.
Tiana is a sophomore at Fremont High School in East Oakland. She's one of more than 2,500 students who got a new bus pass this school year.
Yeah, it makes a difference because we don't got to worry about spending our money.
When AC Transit ran the similar pilot in 2002, after-school participation increased, but school attendance did not. Researchers weren't surprised. They say it usually takes years to change attendance patterns. Well, the new pilot program runs for 3 years. At the end, transit officials will assess what worked, what didn't, and try to expand it to other schools. But no solution will be cheap. Just running this small program costs taxpayers $15 million. We're at the gates of Fremont High.
Good morning, buenos dias.
The assistant principal, Nidia Baez, greets every kid coming in.
Good morning.
Good morning.
She's the one who used to have students asking her for bus money.
So we'd always make sure that all the leaders at the school, the teachers would keep dollars, right? Like, here, you can have a dollar to go home. And then I'd also ask, do you want a dollar to come back tomorrow?
Those dollars came out of her own pocket. Baez says that now, the bus pass sends a message.
I also think students felt like, oh, I get a Clipper card. Like, I feel really, like, you care about me. And students felt like their school was giving them something good.
She says that some students wear the cards around their necks. They're proud of them. Tiana and the rest of the students head to class. They're thinking about their schoolwork, or their friends, or their families. But one thing they don't have to think about is whether they'll have the money to get back home. In Oakland, I'm Eli Wirtschafter for Cross Currents.
If there's some transportation news you think we should be covering, send us an email. It's transportation@klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. For this next story, we're staying in East Oakland to hear a firsthand account of a family who's been displaced from the neighborhood. Aquila Lewis is a poet who was raised in her grandmother's house in East Oakland. And what happened to Aquila actually happened to a lot of families in that part of Oakland during the recession. Her grandmother's house was foreclosed on. It really hit Aquila hard, so she says she wanted to tell this story in order to heal.
This is my grandmother's story, as much as it is mine.
That's how we bought it. We had saved up our little money. Let's see. You hadn't been born yet.
I live with my grandmommy, Ann Attaway, on 2657 67th Avenue from August 2006 to May 2012 and enjoyed every minute of it. But a series of events killed my joy. My grandmommy became a victim of predatory lending. The mortgage ballooned, and on January 25th, 2012, she lost her home of over 40 years to foreclosure. It was devastating to her, because this was the home she bought with my gramps in 1968 with a loan, 50-cent pieces and silver dollars. Now my grandmommy lives in Stockton, far away from her old neighborhood in a senior facility.
I'm still moving craziness in here. They're still renovating my apartment. Mm-hmm. Because they got to put a new fixtures in the bathroom. You know, for me to hold on before I fall and hurt myself in the tub, you know.
Yeah. The foreclosure was devastating to me because I felt like I should have done more to help her fight it. Or maybe if I had a job, we could have kept the house. I don't know how to forgive myself and get past it. So recently, I went back a second time. I felt like I was finally ready to face what had happened and really talk with the people I had known. Dogs are barking. People are working on their yards. I feel like a stranger, but almost like I am still part of the neighborhood.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Oh, my goodness.
My grandmommy's former neighbor is still here. She lives a few doors down. Her name is Jessie Brown. But grandmommy always called her Miss Brown, so I call her that too.
Well, this young lady, I knew her when she was like that. I can't believe it.
Miss Brown was like the team captain in the neighborhood. She organized block parties during National Night Out. And with her leadership, all the neighbors learned to watch out for each other.
Practically everybody on the street does. Everybody called me Mama Brown, you know. Even the gangsters. I got a few gangsters around. Yeah. But they even check on me, you know.
But as more and more people leave, she says the neighborhood isn't like a family the way it used to be.
So I'm in the process now of trying to get the new people to know one another.
Gentrification might be coming to East Oakland, but the bigger picture for Miss Brown is that over the years she's lived here, she's watched the neighborhood become more dangerous.
When I move here, I'm an alterationist person. My business is in the back of the house. I turned my garage into an alteration place. I could leave that front door open. I didn't have any bars on it like you see now, just a screen. I could work out at 12, 1 o'clock at night, and very comfortable. Now I have to lock the door if I'm going to the garbage can.
Being back in the neighborhood was hard for me. It's hard to picture it dangerous. I always felt safe, even walking at night. But by the time I left, I too noticed the change. I've always dealt with hardships through my poetry and spoken word. And since my grandmommy's foreclosure, I've been writing a lot.
A city that's forgotten them. I see the leftovers. Only a handful of leftovers. Gun shells in the ground have created another art piece. Murals decorate empty walls, vacant buildings, storefronts and homes tell the story. Where have the people gone? Who's gonna save them when the ghosts live here now? Who's occupying the place, making space, cause we've been uprooted, dragged, pushed, and pulled.
I'm not the only one to tackle the effects of displacement through art. Other artists I know and admire have done this too. Davin Thompson, a.k.a. Dudat, has a similar story. His mother's house was also foreclosed.
It feels like having the rug pulled out from under you. And it feels like, I know moving out of my home, and my parents had been there for about 40 years. So for me personally, it was like reliving your life, you feel me? And like packing up somebody else's life at the same time. And just like really like closing out of a chapter. And I guess like me being an artist, you feel me? I have a talent to kind of express that and to talk about it, you know what I mean? And really like put it in perspective.
I know what he means. Foreclosure made me feel like I had to start my life all over again. Dudat says these stories of urban change get told a lot, even stories about people like him. But rarely do we hear the stories told by people like him.
I want to be able to speak to my life and my observations around like what's in my community and my hood. And I won't front, like, you feel me? I wasn't in the trap, you know what I'm saying? I wasn't like in the hood like that, you feel me? But I still got eyes, I got partners who live that life, you feel me? I can see, you know what I mean? Not only can I see, I can think.
You know what's funny? If we go back in the history of Oakland.
Mr. Birch is a rapper out of East Oakland.
Majority of Caucasian people lived in East Oakland, and we all was in the West.
His mother also lost her home due to foreclosure. Mr. Birch thinks housing displacement starts with a different kind of displacement, feeling displaced or excluded from society, period. It starts with not having things that it seems like everybody else does, like two parents, functional schools, a future. And that's what makes it easy to sell out the small things that we actually do have.
You have a whole bunch of people sitting in a home selling dope out their grandmother's house. We're not knowing, like, grandma worked this hard for this house. Mm-hmm. We're not keeping things together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're not keeping it for our future children and our grandchildren and things of that nature. We're not owning anything. We're losing it and giving it to somebody else, and then we're just moving somewhere else just because it's cheaper. But then they're going to turn around and do the same thing once we move there.
I know Mr. Birch has written about this in his work. I highlighted too in my poems about how our grandparents, great-grandparents, and ancestors would view the situation today.
I wasn't around to see the tears, the blood being spilt, guns blazing, hoses gushing, but I see their faces gazing somewhere, thinking about way back when. I could put my fingers in the dents and trace where it all began. Tears rushing, creating rivers. Their faces tell storylines. It's seeped in the bloodlines. Complacency in empty homes and in communities. Fragmented, lost hope, no hope. A city that's forgotten.
Thinking about this brings me back to Ms. Brown. While talking with her, I expressed for the first time my frustration and shame.
I'm sorry. I really have been wanting to come by for a while. I think a lot of it is just really upset, sad that my grandma lost her home, and I feel like she's still there, and I'm about to cry because I just going through that whole process was really hard to watch her. I never really discussed it. I only wrote it in my poems.
That's the bad part. You never discussed it. See, when you don't talk about it, you have to have somebody you can talk to. It's like therapy.
It still hurts, but I'm relieved now after talking with Ms. Brown and my grandmommy, and now I finally have the courage to face my fears, forgive myself, and let the healing continue by sharing my spoken word until displacement doesn't happen again.
That was poet Aquila Lewis in a story that originally aired in May as part of our Sights and Sounds of East Oakland project in collaboration with Oakland Voices. Since that story first aired, Aquila has moved out to Stockton. She says she hopes it's temporary. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We're less than 4 weeks away from Election Day. Right about now, you're probably drowning in political messages. They jam up your mailbox, they talk at you during your favorite TV show, and they spark conflict on your Facebook page. Well, in Oakland, they appear in a much more unlikely place. KALW's Ryan Miller takes us there.
Just northeast of Lake Merritt, across the 580 freeway, you really can't miss it.
It's very public. I know that I see it every day coming home from work.
There's a variety of messages. This is one of the few places, I guess, in this neighborhood that has such kind of has some social conscience to it.
Yes, I do recall some inflammatory political messages, all very left, throughout the years.
From my apartment window, I can actually see the Grand Lake neon signs.
This is Alan Michon. I've been the operator of the Grand Lake Theater since 1980. And I started posting political messages on the marquee on the day that the so-called Supreme Court stopped the counting of votes in Florida in 2000. The first message was, "This is America. Every vote should be counted."
We're in Michon's office in Alameda. We're looking at photos of, I don't know if they're all the messages that ever appeared on the marquee, but many, hundreds of them anyway. How many do you think there have been?
I have no idea. At least a few hundred.
Okay, so let's go through a few of these. And I know you also sometimes are very local.
Some of the local things we've talked about are the parking issues. As far as nationally, we railed against the war constantly. Here's a good one. Truth is to the Bush administration as sunlight is to Dracula.
But the majority of the marquee messages have a single focus.
one of the big issues that I have focused on over the years with the marquee is to point out that American elections are absolutely fraudulent. And I am extremely concerned about the fact that the use of electronic voting machines and electronic tabulation of votes has destroyed the freedom of the citizens of this country.
So Michonne has a very big, very visible platform to broadcast his political opinions. And what does the city of Oakland think about that?
The city is in no way wanting to curtail the public's right to free speech, and that marquee is one venue for doing so.
Scott Miller works with the City of Oakland's Planning and Building Department, which regulates signage.
What it says is really not within the purview of zoning to dictate. We don't dictate what some business owner should say about their business. We just define parameters for size, and we do not deal with the content.
So, what do you need to know before putting up your own political poster or flyer?
Those generally would fall under the special sign category, and there really is no code spelled out.
Miller thumbs through his document of zoning regulations adopted in the early 1990s.
The code provides some discretion. The allowance says special signs shall be limited to the area of display surface, number, location, and height, and kind of mobility, illumination, and material that are customarily and necessary to the purposes they serve. So,
are you following this?
That's a lot of bureaucratic gobbledygook. I don't know if the city has ever been sort of forced to indicate exactly what that means, but it certainly allows some flexibility, and it would probably, if called upon, allow the city to apply some discretion.
In Oakland, for signs relating to elections, regulations require that they not go up more than 90 days before the vote, nor stay up more than 10 days after the vote. And they can't be bigger than 32 square feet. But according to Miller, given limited city resources, compliance is not heavily enforced anyway, unless there are a lot of complaints. That hasn't happened yet to Alan Michonne at the Grand Lake.
Another one, in a true democracy, the president is elected by counting votes and winning.
So, Alan, tell us how you really feel.
Well, I think I've said it.
In big, bold block letters, in Oakland, I'm Ryan Miller for Cross Currents.
That story originally aired in the fall of 2015. The marquee messages are not there today. And that's our show for today. The team includes Jürgen Klemm, Leela Day, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Olivia Henry, Jeremy Jew, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Judy Silber, Carrie Spivak, and Andrew Stelzer. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Today's show was engineered by James Rowlands. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by a San Francisco ambient musician known as Tycho. Tycho plays at this weekend's Treasure Island Music Festival, and it'll be the last year the festival is in its namesake location on Treasure Island. They have to find a new site because of planned development. All the details are at kalw.org. Click Cross Currents. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.